Amen.
Seated, please.
Morning, church. It's good to see everybody here this morning. Big thanks to everybody who helped with the fish fry last week. Last week, yeah. So big thanks to everybody who stuck around and helped set up and helped take down and helped cook, and everybody who brought vegetables to the person who brought lima beans. You know, they didn't get eaten all the way, and that's your fault. You know, I told you not to do that, but you know, nobody likes those, but you brought them anyway. So, you know, that's actually, I think they did get eaten, like the whole thing. Either that or I threw them in the trash. Anyway, last week we started a series, and I don't know how long the series ago, it just depends, but there are a host of words that we talk about a lot in church or we talk about a lot in the Bible. I just started writing them down. Let me just kind of run through them real quick. Atonement, covenant, holiness, purification, propitiation, fellowship, heaven, hell, Eucharist, rapture, maybe not rapture, transgression, reconciliation, saints. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean, these are all like religious terms we all grew up with, I assume. But these are also words that we usually don't talk about very much. Matter of fact, if someone starts a sermon talking about propitiation, I'll turn the channel. Because the word is dusty. It's just old and worn out, and I don't really know, really care to. Or somebody wants to talk about the rapture. Even when you talk about holiness, and I'm not saying they're bad words. I'm just saying they're old. They're dated, worn out. Nobody cares. Maybe you do. But the vast majority of people have kind of moved on. They want something fresh, something new, something we can pronounce, something we kind of know more about. The problem is that when we don't talk about these things, I feel as if we lose something pretty important. We lose important pieces to it. We do this with everything. When I was in second grade, you probably have to help me out, Jaheim, so I don't lose my cool. When I was in second grade, my teacher assigned us a solar system project. It was y'all used to make the solar system mobiles. You know, you have to get the wire and put the little planets on there. Yeah, I thought that was the coolest thing. And that kind of sparked a lifelong interest in astrology and planets. And I've just always been a fan of that. Astronauts, immediately I thought, when I grow up, I'm going to be an astronaut. And you got to have 20/20 vision, so I'm out. You know, I can't do that. And you can't get airsick, so I'm out. I can't do that either. And you probably die. So that's I don't know. But I was really just interested in the solar system. I liked all the planets. And I'll be honest with you, ever since the second grade, nobody seemed to be as interested as I was. You know, you start talking to people about planets, everybody thinks you're a nerd. I mean, let's just be honest, right? As soon as that went up, I started talking about it. Some of you thought, nerd, you know, here we go. But I'm serious. I mean, even, you know, I remember even my second grade mobile. You know, I got back on the bus, somebody broke my mobile on purpose. They're just being mean because they thought I was a nerd. Maybe I was. But, you know, I was kind of sad about that. Even later on, I went to college, and guess what I wanted to take? Astrology. Yeah. Nope. In order to take astrology, you got to take this, and you got to take this, and you got to take this, because they want to talk about all these other science stuff. I don't care about that. I just want to talk about the planets. And then I think the scientists came out and said a few years ago that Pluto is no longer a planet. Yeah, I was heartbroken. I went to look for that on the news. Wasn't even reported in the newspapers. Wasn't reported online. I tried to tell somebody about it. I said, did you know Pluto wasn't a planet? And they said, the dog? What? You know, I just feel like that nobody's really, you know, on my level here. And, you know, nobody's interested. Again, I just feel like it's like talking about atonement or holiness or something. You know, you start talking and people think, oh, nerd, you know, or here we go. You know, somebody's holy, okay. It's almost as if we're not talking about reality when we start talking about those religious words that I told you about. And there's a lot of us who really feel like we really can't talk about our faith because there are people who don't understand it. It's really big and complex, like the solar system, or there are things that we can't understand. You know, even as an adult, when's the last time we went to the moon? You know, it's even the space program's kind of lost its luster. You know, I mean, John F. Kennedy in his inauguration speech talked about we're going to be the first to do this and we're going to put us on the map. We went to the moon. Yay. What have we done since? When are we going to go to Mars? You know, it's like it's old, you know? It's dusty now. We just don't do much. There's a program called Mars One. I think I've told you some of you this. And the program decided that there's the science side, which is going to send a lot of people to Mars, and then there's the civilian side. Problem with the science government side is that they have all the tools, but they don't have any money. Government's not going to give them no money because all y'all want to collect Social Security checks. Y'all don't want to give y'all Social Security. I say y'all, me too. But, you know, we don't want to give that over here to go to Mars. Anybody want to take less in Social Security and Medicare so I can go to Mars? Of course not. See? Nerd. See what I'm saying? Again. So the government's not going to send anybody. So the civilian side decided we're going to send a group of people up there, and they're going to raise money. They're raising more money than the government side. And all they wanted was volunteers to volunteer to go to Mars. And if you'll volunteer, then they'll send people, and you can start a community on Mars whenever they go. Guess who volunteered? Guess whose family wasn't happy about it? Now, I know that if you volunteer and you do go, you probably won't come back. I got it. But you die on Mars. Nobody's agreeing with me on this. You see what I'm saying? I'm right. See, it's like I'm in second grade again. Nobody agrees. Nerd. You know, I'm serious. I signed up. Was I rejected? I'm not going to get into that. But I still signed up. I would have gone. My whole life, I feel like, look up online. You see my name. I signed up. Okay, I would go. I digress. I feel like I'm in a league of my own here. And I feel like, so you're like, yeah, you are. Kind of feel like that way sometimes with church too, you know, and faith. And, you know, you start talking to somebody about holiness, and you start talking about somebody about being holy, and they just look at you like you're weird. And then I start thinking, maybe, you know, maybe I am. What I want to do last week and this week, maybe next week, is talk about these big ideas that I think are extremely important. And I think what we have to do is just go backwards and try to look at, well, let's look at holiness. Let's just look at that this week. And by looking at holiness, what we discover is that it's not just some dated word. It's not just some dated idea that has nothing to do with anything. It's actually almost at the heart of our faith. It's almost at the heart of what God wants. This morning, what I'd like to do maybe is think of, let's just think for a minute of God as the sun, okay? When we talk about holiness, let's just think of the sun, because I like the solar system, so sorry. But if you think of holiness as the sun, because this is really what holiness means. The sun is different from all other stars. I'm not going to give you an astrology lesson, okay? I'm an armchair astrology, okay? Don't worry about it. But the sun is different from all other stars. It's brighter, it's bigger, it's hotter. There's nothing like the sun. Nothing. The sun stands alone. It's unique. One of the definitions of holiness is that it's different from everything. So if God is holy, that means nothing is like God. But there's a second part to holiness. If God is holy, it means that he is the source of life to everything else. Y'all can ignore global warming. Y'all can ignore the environment. You can continue to throw junk outside your car. We can continue to throw styrofoam in the ocean. Y'all do whatever y'all want. It's all right. We got one sun. The sun is in charge of everything from those big biology words like photosynthesis that I probably mispronounced to other things, even down to minute things like warmth and light. You ain't got the sun, we freeze to death. We can't see. The sun, the holiness of God, gives life to all. There's a third part to holiness. Ain't nobody gonna like this part. The holiness is God's power source. It's what makes him so powerful. Holiness doesn't mean goodness. It just means holiness. And when you start talking about holiness, it's not just good. It can also be bad. Y'all remember the eclipse? You remember you had to have special glasses? Why do we have to do that? Some of y'all didn't want to wear the glasses. Some of y'all thought, okay, I'm going to look at it. Yeah, that was dumb. Yeah. Sun has a lot of power behind it. When you get too close to the sun, you get anybody stay out in Destin, Florida for 9 hours with no sunscreen? What happened? Yeah. Yeah. And most of y'all, it's when y'all were younger, and your parents said you need to put on sunscreen. What'd you say? I'm good. Were you good? No, you weren't good, because the sun is too powerful. The sun is good, and let's just sit out there. There's a reason we need the moon to come out and Nashville to get on the other side of the sun so that we can get a break. We can't just sit out there with the sun all day. It'll kill us. It's too powerful. And like the sun, if you think about the sun in this way or that way, the sun is hottest at its core, but, you know, it's still dangerous to get within a few feet of it, right? Let's think of holiness this way. God's holiness is concentrated where he is, but wherever God is, everything around him is holy too. You know, it's like the sun. You know, it's, if God's standing right here, then this is getting all the rays all through here. If God's standing right here, the whole church just gets holified. I made that word up, but you see what I'm saying, right? The whole church shares the rays. And this is exactly what happened in that text that Brother Roger read this morning. By the way, Brother Roger's good at reading the text. I hear him all the way in the back, nice deep voice, a lot deeper than mine. It was great scripture reading. We all know this story. This is the first time the word holiness occurs in your Bibles. It wasn't in Genesis. You ain't heard it in the garden. This is the first time. And then Moses comes and God says, take your shoes off because this is holy ground. Why is it holy? Because God's here. And if God's here, then this is holy too. And we start to see that holiness is a serious business. It's like the sun. It's just dangerous. And if you get too close to it, if you get too close, then you're really close to that power. And here's what God decides. God decides he wants to live with all of Israel. He wants to live with them. And so he confines all that holiness. Anybody got Wi-Fi at home? You got a hotspot? So think of the Holy of Holies as a hotspot, right? So you got God's hotspot, and there he is, and that's holy. But if your some of y'all's hotspot, where is it at? Underneath the steps or something? In the kitchen? In your room? In the kids' room? Wherever it is. There's the hot spot. If you pull up your phone and you look at how many bars you got, farther away you get, bars go down. Closer you get, bars go up. So God's hot spot is right there in the Holy of Holies. But the holy place is still pretty hot. You get outside, that's pretty hot. What God's trying to do is to get the area around him to be holy, to help us all to live. But here's the problem, that we can't stop touching stuff. We touch disease, we touch blood, we touch dead animal, we just touch stuff. My wife and my father's here this morning, in case y'all haven't met him. I was hoping he would preach. He didn't take the bait. We were talking last night, and we were talking about kids, because what else do you talk about if you got grandparents and parents around, kids and grandkids. But we were talking about that kids, we all know this, kids have a tendency to touch things. Some of y'all look at me like I'm crazy. Don't do that. You, I'm not crazy. You're crazy. You know they do. Kids touch things. Kids can't keep their... How many times did your mother tell you to keep your hands to yourself? You know, I even reminded my dad. I said, I remember being 18 years old. 18 years old. Some of y'all think I'm still 18. That wasn't last year. It's like a long time ago. 18 years old. And I remember my father looking at me saying, keep your hands in your pockets. Stop touching stuff. Stop touching everything. I don't know what it was. You could just be in here and it would just. You know, why do kids do that? You ever know? They just touch walls, pick up stuff. You know, it's just, they just touch stuff. Or how about little bitty kids? Not me, real little, micro kids. Like 2 and 3, what do they love to touch? Come on, what do they love to touch? Yes, sir. Walls. Yeah, wall. You ever been to somebody's house and you can tell they got kids? How can you tell? The walls. Walls don't lie. And some of y'all, and I've been to some people's house, not y'all, of course, but I've been to some people's house, and it's like the kids got paint or something and just went at it. I don't know why y'all allowed that. And then some kids, they didn't do it, we used to have a rule when the kids ate dinner at our, we still do, but they do it better. But we have it, when the kids get down, you're not allowed to move until mother has wiped off your hands. You're not allowed to move. You know, you can't get down or nothing like that because kids eat with their hand, eat with their face. We got to wipe their face. Kids just touch everything. Look, this ain't just kids. This is adults too. And I don't, adults, it's not really like Lord's Supper stuff and walls. We can't seem to keep our hands to ourselves when it comes to people. There are a lot of men who should have kept their hands to themselves when she was concerned. And really all it was you should have just kept your hands to yourself. There are a lot of us who should have kept our hands to ourselves on a computer. But we just had to go to wherever place that was. We should have kept our hands to ourselves when we stopped at that place and bought that. We should have kept our hands to ourselves when we decided to re-up that prescription when we didn't need to. It really was, you know, what I could tell you what my father told me and what his father probably told him when he was 18. We should still be telling each other when we're 50, 60, and 70. Keep your hands to yourself. Put your hands in your pockets. You don't have to touch that. You don't have to go there. But that's what we do, ain't it? We just touch stuff. And God cannot stop it. I don't want to be too hard on y'all. Sometimes it's unintentionally. Sometimes we just make mistakes, don't we? I mean, not every sin is you know what I'm going to do this morning? I'm going to sin today. That's what I'm going to do. Sometimes just bad stuff happens. Sometimes we just make mistakes. Sometimes we just can't seem to do things right. I read a really cool article from Alabama Living Magazine. I got this from an Alabama Crimson Tide fan. I don't know why, but it ended up being a great article, so here it is. The magazine asked their readers if they had ever met a U.S. president, and please tell us what the experience was. I thought I'd get a bunch of Trump stories, which they did, and that's cool. But also there were some older readers who submitted stories from older presidents or previous presidents. One of the coolest stories, 1966. The man's story was that he accompanied his boss, who was a lobbyist in D.C., to the White House because his boss wanted President Johnson, to add a paragraph to a speech he was given. And so Johnson said, come up to the White House, I'm going to read this, we'll see how it works. And because this man worked for the lobbyist, he's the one who actually wrote the paragraph. And so his boss said, hey, you wrote it, why don't you come with me? You won't meet President Johnson. They won't let you do anything, but at least you can come along for the ride. And so he said, I got to go up there, and we got to go into the White House. We got to go through security. We walked in, and my boss and Secret Service said, sit right here and don't move. So I sat there. We were in the White House. I didn't know what part of the White House we were in, and I was sitting there, and then I had to go to the restroom. And so I asked permission if I could go to the restroom, and they said yes, and they escorted me to the restroom. And when I came out of the restroom, the Secret Service was gone. And being a young man, I thought it was just okay to walk around now. It was a great story. Alabama Living Magazine. And so the man said he started to just, his words were, leisurely make my way through the West Wing. Bad idea. He said, but then I heard the Secret Service agent asking someone, where is he? And in a panic, I opened a door and ducked into a room. And guess who was in that room? There stood President Johnson with his glasses on his nose, at the tip of his nose, reading some papers. He turned to me and said, are you the one who wrote this junk? I said, yes, Mr. President. He said, who are you? And I said, I'm fired. That's the story. How'd I get in this room? You know, it wasn't my fault. You know, you find yourself in this situation. I thought of that story when I was thinking about this story in Isaiah 6, when Isaiah finds himself in the throne room of God. Isaiah knows that he has touched some unholy things. Isaiah knows he's been where he shouldn't. And then when he actually arrives in the throne room, there were the angels, and here they come. And Isaiah thinks to himself, I am fired. In fact, Isaiah says literally, I have come undone. Because he knows he's in the wrong place. He knows. And every time you touch something, you become that. And so he knows he's contaminated. But for the first time, something different happens. You know, we're all, you touch something, you got it on you. You go outside, you cook burgers, you smell like charcoal. Look, that's just, I can tell where you've been. And you come in from somewhere, if your children went out and smoked cigarettes and they come in, I know you smoked. You can't lie about it. You did it. You drink, we can smell it. You come in from somewhere, we know it. We carry stuff with us through this earth. That's how sin works. It gets on you. You can't get it off. But in this scene, the opposite happens. The angels come to Isaiah and they say, don't panic. And they take a coal from the sacrifice and they touch Isaiah's lips. And for the first time, it's not that what Isaiah touches becomes contaminated or toxic. It's that what touches Isaiah makes him clean. What does that mean? How's that going to happen? Don't know. It didn't go any farther. We don't know. And then the prophet Ezekiel, he steps in. He wants to tell a story. Help me out here. And then he's got it's almost as weird as Isaiah. He has this vision of the temple, and the temple's like leaking water. And then the water starts rolling down, and the water starts running all through Israel, and it gives everything life. And the water runs into the Dead Sea. What's going on here? Ezekiel talks about the holiness of God. God seems to be after the reverse. And then when you get to the New Testament, the reverse seems to appear. Nobody knows who this man is. He just shows up, starts preaching, starts teaching, starts talking about all these different things. Nobody knows who he is. We're really not sure. The demons know who he is. The demons say, we know who you are. You're the who? Not the Son of God. You're the Holy One of God. There's that word. We know who you are. You're the Holy One. That means Jesus is different. That means Jesus has power. And then Jesus does something strange. You know when you talk to people, there's always that fear that whatever germs they have are going to get on you. Whenever you're around people, usually we have the tendency, it's kind of like with your kids again, you don't want your kids hanging out with people who can influence them wrong, yeah, because it's going to get on them. You know, and they say, oh, I got it, Dad. No, you don't. This is what happens. Adults do it. You get around people, you become like them, you touch things, they get on you. Jesus has a different mentality. When Jesus comes through, there are two or three different groups that you don't want to touch. Lepers, blind people, people who bleed all the time, dead people. Jesus touches all these people. And instead of their sicknesses making him sick, what happens? He gets on them. The opposite is happening. Not like the Old Testament when, you know, we touch stuff and now we got to go in here, we got to purify ourselves. Jesus, it's like Jesus is the coal in Isaiah. Jesus is the one who's now making everyone clean and pure and different. And he's giving us life. And it's not just him touching people touching him. When's the last time somebody touched you unexpectedly and you didn't panic? That's why when you go to the hospital, what's at every room before you walk in? Hand sanitizer. It's at every room. How many times do you do that hand sanitizer when y'all go to the hospital? Who said none? Better not visit me. I walk in, I hit it. Hit the elevator, I hit it. I get to the room, I hit it. I walk in, you know, wipe my hands. I'm dripping now. I probably got it on you, you know, just doing this. And then, and it's not because I don't like you. And it's not because I think you're dirty. It's really not. It's really, I don't know what's in this hospital, be honest with you. I really don't. It could be something serious in here. I don't know. What I do know is this. If there's an antibacterial station every 5 feet, you probably want to use it. If you go to a place and they think they need to provide this all the time, might be a good idea to use it. Might not be a good idea to bite your nails while you're standing around here. Just saying. Because the world is full of contaminants. And we're so paranoid about keeping our hands clean, but we're not really paranoid about being spiritually clean. My hands are clean though, right? But my soul's toxic. So we try to do things. Like we put on sunscreen. You know, try to do things to keep ourselves clean. Try to do things to stay spiritually well. God knows you can't do it. No matter what you do, it's just a big lie. The only way you can be clean is for Jesus to heal you. It's for God to make you clean. Not clean like purified, just clean in that all the things you touch won't destroy you anymore. Jesus became what Isaiah talked about. But here's the part I want to end with. We always talk about this holiness business and this prophecy business, and we think it was just Jesus fulfilled this prophecy, but what about Isaiah's prophecy, or Ezekiel's prophecy? Remember what Ezekiel said? That the water flowed out of the temple? In John chapter 7, Jesus says that those who follow me are like streams of living water. They water the earth. Jesus is talking about us. That's who he's talking about. He's talking about us. Church, if we're going to truly understand holiness, it's not just understanding who Jesus was, it's also understanding who Jesus has called us to be. If God is holy and Jesus is holy, that means that you and I have to be holy. That means you and I have to be different. That means you and I have to figure out how we can be powerful in this world. That means you and I have to figure out how we can give life to other people. And I'm going to tell you right now, it ain't that hard. It's those four words. That's not even the correct English. It ain't that hard. It's really not to be holy. I will say that you're not going to want to do it. It's not hard. You're just not going to want to do it. Because it feels as if it won't matter. Maybe it feels old, or maybe it feels dusty, or maybe it just feels like we're just talking about something that's really not relevant. I assure you that there will be moments in your life where you need to take action. You might think it has nothing to do with anything, and you just won't, it won't affect anything at all. God's call to be holy means that we take our calling seriously. Let me share with you this and we'll be done. This past year, 2018, in the 13th district of Kentucky, we all know Kentucky's a red state, right? I mean, we all pretty caught up. 2018, 13th district of Kentucky. I never mentioned politics, but it's a good story. DJ Johnson is the incumbent Republican candidate running for the House seat in the 13th district. DJ Johnson is running against Democrat Jim Glenn. Now, congressman for a while, and this is in the 13th district. This 13th district includes Smithville. Some of y'all been to Smithville, Kentucky. In Smithville lives a man who's 28, I guess he's 29 now. At the time he was 28 years old, Trevor Schuler. Trevor had transferred there a year before, and he's working in the administration department in the lumber company there in Smithville. Now, he's a registered Republican. This is not like my friend, so like, you know, why is he telling the story? This is public knowledge, so. Trevor's a registered Republican. He moved there from a deep red state, like right next door. So he moved there. Trevor owns a Make America Great Again hat. He wears the hat a lot. Trevor's neighbor was a man by the name of Jackson Irwin. They just call him Mr. Irwin. Mr. Irwin is almost 80 years old. Guess what political affiliation Mr. Irwin is? Wrong. Democrat. And so Trevor's next-door neighbor is Mr. Irwin, who doesn't hide the fact that he doesn't like Republicans. He doesn't make it a secret that he thinks there's Jesus Christ, Barack Obama. Like, that's the level. Jesus, Barack. You know, that's how it goes. That's not a secret. He lets everybody know. Mr. Jackson, including Trevor. He's always let Trevor know. As soon as Trevor moved in, the first question, because they interviewed Trevor, the first question that Mr. Jackson asked his new neighbor when he moved in is, who'd you vote for? Before, what's your name? How you doing? How you doing? Who'd you vote for? And he said, well, I voted for Mr. Trump. He said, I voted for Mr. Trump. And Mr. Jackson said, then we can't have a relationship. That's it. So that's kind of how the situation was. Let me fast forward. Election day. Trevor comes home from work. Trevor's already done his civic duty. He's voted. He's come home. But he hasn't seen Mr. Jackson. He hasn't seen him in a few days. He'd been looking for him. A little worried. And he got worried because Mr. Jackson's trash was put at the end of the road. And they come and get the trash, but the trash can's still out there. So he knows something's not right. And right when he gets home this day on election, and he's thinking about election day because he says, oh, no, Mr. Jackson didn't vote for, you know, we know he voted for the Democratic candidate. There comes an Uber and drops Mr. Jackson off. Mr. Jackson gets out with crutches. And Trevor walked over and he said, you need help? And he said, Mr. Jackson, for the first time, spoke to me. He said, could you help me get in the door? He said, what happened? And he said, I had an accident. I fell down the steps a few days ago. I hadn't even been home. He said, I helped him the door. And he said, well, it's election day. And he said, well, I won't get to vote. Trevor said, would you like to go vote? I'll take you. Polls don't close till, you know, 7 o'clock. And Mr. Jackson said, yes. And so they went and got in the car. And he drove him to the polls. Mr. Jackson voted. And Mr. Jackson came out and Trevor said, who'd you vote for? He said, for the first time, he said, Mr. Jackson laughed. The first time, Mr. Jackson laughed. The story is good on its own. You remember I told you that the Democrat running for this seat's name is Jim Glenn. The Republican running was an incumbent, D.J. Johnson. I also didn't tell you that along the way, Mr. Jackson said, could we stop off at my friend's house? I don't think he voted either. And Trevor said, sure, and they stopped and picked up Mr. Jackson's friend. So two Democrats voted in that election because Trevor took them. The Democrat won that seat by one vote. I didn't make that up. You think it's a preacher story? Google it. Google it. So some of y'all, he lied. That's a preacher stuff. D.J. Johnson, Jim Glenn, read it and weep. One vote. Huh. Makes some of y'all think twice about taking people to the polls, don't it? Yeah. Especially if you vote different. What does holiness mean? Holiness means that we don't let the world dictate how we treat people. Holiness means that what I do is different than what everybody else does. Holiness means that I choose to be streams of living water to all those in my neighborhood, no matter what political affiliation they are, no matter what color they are, no matter what gender they are, no matter what they are, who they are, how they are, I can be streams of living water. Why am I so afraid that they're going to get on me? Is it too much to ask that we transfer some holiness to other people who need it? But in order to do that, you're going to have to make sure that what you transfer is holiness and not hate or ill will or nastiness. Because somebody's going to get on somebody. Something will transfer. God calls us to be holy, and that means that He wants us to make a difference in the lives of all people. The only reason I know about that story is because they interviewed, you know, that was like a whole story about what happened on that day of the election. It was bigger than the election itself. This kid with his Make America Great Again hat drives these two elderly folks in to vote for the other candidate, and that other candidate wins by one vote. And the cool part about it is when they talked to Trevor afterwards, you know, they were asking him about it, and they said, do you regret it? He said, no. He said, I'm just glad he's okay. I'm glad I could help. In America, we say that? I thought we were mad all the time. And come to find out, those two have decided that every election going forward, they're going to go vote together. They're going to go pick up the other gentleman. And he said, and we're going to try and see if there are other people we can pick up along the way. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if Christians could have the same attitude? No matter what you vote for, I just want to pick you up. I just want to be with you. And let's see if we can pick up some other people too? Could it be that that really, truly is holiness after all? God calls us to be holy. Let us be holy. Let us look for people to be holy with. If you are not holy this morning, God calls you so that he might make you holy. As we stand and sing.